Recorded live from Stockton, California, this is Jammin' with the Best.
Episode 92-ish, maybe. This might come out before episode 91. I'm not sure, but I said episode 91 last time, and so this is the next one, episode 92.
Damn straight, stick to it.
Yep, I'm going to do that. We got a real special guest here, Matt Beatty.
Good to be here. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
You meant,
Danny
you
just showed up. Danny was a little, we were supposed to start this at 4:20.
Yeah, my bad. You know,
the Blame it on the Sean's.
Open crew takes a while.
Blame it on the Sean's and
Very
the Leonard.
Thorough. Very thorough. Yeah. No, we do have a special guest, though. Matt Beatty, Masters Cup TD, in-house, too. This is in-studio.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming through.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure coming up here. It's almost been a year since I was up here last, so it's always fun to check out the changes. This room has changed a lot. Yeah, yeah, significantly changed.
Seeing the Jomez putting video and how like white and kind of bare this room was, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different.
Yeah.
It looks a lot nicer in here.
It does. We tried the wall of stuffies.
Yeah.
It was hard. So we had a lot of stuffed animals.
Not nearly enough.
But not even close to enough. That wall is way bigger than I imagined it would be, I think.
Yeah.
It's really tall.
To cover that in stuffed animals, you'd have to essentially solicit the help of, you know, every Bay Area child that still has all their stuffed animals.
And man, we tried.
We tried. Like
we tried.
We failed, but we tried.
Yeah. Didn't have the commitment. That's okay. This is beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you, Nick Fisher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Between the artwork on the walls, the actual wooden artwork with the backlit mm-hmm. logo, all the actual art, all the discs. I mean, it's like a history of disc golf from like starting over here. I mean, you've got the Steady Ed disc over here.
Yeah. Ashes.
Yeah. It's just, there's a lot of really cool stuff in here.
Yeah.
It's coming together. It looks good. It looks good. Full left turn, though. Masters Cup. Like, right off the bat, how do you feel about the NT? Obviously, the PDGA was absorbed into Disc Golf Pro Tour, and it feels like Masters Cup was, like, taken down a rung to Silver Series. Silver Series is still, like, huge event. There's only 20, if you include, like, Pro Tour and Silver Series. Mm-hmm. It's still an extremely exclusive event, but it does feel a little bit like Masters Cup was taken down a step. How do you feel about that?
I would have to agree with you in some ways. The Masters Cup itself is just, it's one of those tournaments that is, it's a destination tournament for most because they really want to play De La Viega. They want to play top of the world.
Yeah.
Playing in the Masters Cup is a bonus. I think the drawback to us not being in elite series is maybe we miss out on some of the top talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can already tell you that Paul and Ricky are going to be there. So a lot of people, and I'm not calling any of the pro disc golfers, you know, followers or sheep or anything like that, but when they go to big tournaments, the others kind of fall in line and go do the same thing.
Sure.
But we lack certain things that are really hard to overcome. We don't have restrooms on site aside from the one that's in the parking lot. So we don't have brick and mortar restrooms like some public parks do. We don't have running water. Mm-hmm. We don't have electricity. Therefore we don't have internet access up there. So we're hindered in some ways. So for us to still be considered a part of the Pro Tour, being a Silver Series event with the opportunity to step up to an Elite Series event at some point in time is really wonderful.
So is that how it was sort of approached to you?
Yes or no. I went through the bid process that the PDGA had in place for the National Tour for 2022, and I was told that the National Tour had been absorbed by the Disc Golf Pro Tour,
mm-hmm.
and that my tournament would still fall in under the Disc Golf Pro Tour flag just as a Silver Series event.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't argue the point because I knew eventually the Disc Golf Pro Tour was going to outgrow the National Tour, and it did, you know, probably quicker than I think the PDGA even would like to, you know, admit to, just because they were putting on a wonderful series that a lot of people were really, really buying into and backing quite a bit. I love all the guys at the PDGA. It's sad that I don't get to work with them as much and as closely this year, but they'll still be my friends. They'll still be people that I can use as a resource when I want to, you know, shoot ideas off of them to get their input because I value their opinion. So it's for the better, I would say, that we're moving in this direction.
And so what would it take essentially for Masters Cup to jump back into the main tour?
Probably just a better infrastructure at the local course.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is parking. Parking is a big concern. So what I'm actually doing this year is I'm trying to work with the city of Santa Cruz to reserve the lower De La Viega park system, which has a massive parking lot. And I would only be reserving that area just for the parking lot. So therefore, I'd be renting and reserving a second shuttle. So we'd have a spectator-only parking area, separating the two, giving the spectator, you know, really giving the spectators a better experience. You know, bringing in food trucks this year, which is going to be rad. We're going to bring food trucks in for the Pro-Am weekend and two different food trucks, hopefully, for the Silver Series tournament. We're also working with a local brewery to have some like special edition beer for us and have like some sort of event take place at their venue the week leading up to the Masters Cup. I believe Tom Schott is probably still wanting to do Meet the Pros and bring Meet the Pros back, the original Skins match.
That's so much fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's the original Skins match. Like I know GK Pro and I know you guys back GK Pro with their Skins match, but the one at the Masters Cup, I believe, is probably where GK Pro took some of their inspiration. Was like,
yeah, at the very least coincidental, but that certainly was like the premier Skins match. Yeah, totally. I can think of like Climo, Doss, Avery, like that's the one.
Yeah. Oh yeah, guaranteed. I mean, there was people thought that the last all ladies Skins match that we had in 2018, I want to say, was the first time it had happened, and it was actually the second time it had happened. The first, I actually have one the poster on my wall, but it was Valerie, Des Redding, Burligar from Santa Cruz, and then there was supposed to be a fourth woman that was there, but she actually never ended up making it to Meet the Pros or the tournament. So it ended up just being a three-way battle.
Interesting.
And it still had the same $2,000 purse, so the money got split three ways as opposed to four, so they all made a little bit more money, which was awesome.
That's three great players, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and so that'll happen again. How do you choose who plays in that?
That's all through Tommy. Tommy chooses. It's his, you know, it's totally his branding, his idea. He just likes to run it the same weekend as the Masters Cup because that's when all the pros are going to be in town.
It's a high value, you know, high dollar amount Skins match. It's it's fun to see.
Yeah, and he started shortening it down to just the tournament layout for a while. And then I believe the last time we ran it was just an 18-hole layout, which would actually work out perfectly this year because that's what we're offering during the Masters Cup is 14 holes or 18 holes not instead of 24.
Yeah, I heard that this morning when we were out there. That it was just going to be 18 holes for the main course, and then it's ball golf course on Sunday.
Yep, for the Silver Series weekend, not the Pro-Am.
Okay, and so is that basically just, is it live Sunday?
Yep, live Sunday because it's the Silver Series, so that's what they do, and I believe there's going to be some sort of post-produced action being put up either through the Disc Golf Pro Tour, through their media outlets. Like either on YouTube or maybe just behind their paywall on the Disc Golf Network. But I believe there's also going to be, you know, the favorites like CCDG and Jomez and GK and all them. But that is still information that I believe is still being worked out.
Yeah.
So
what do you take out to get it to 18? It's traditionally has been 24.
The last 7 to 8 years has been 24 out of our 29 that we have. So it's easy though to cut out the parking lot because the parking lot is where we have a lot of hustle and bustle. There's usually a lot of cars. So that's an easy thing to nix. Figuring out where to go from what we have to work with after that is what makes it difficult. But knowing that all of the pros hate crossing fairways, that makes it easy because it's like, okay, well, that means 5 and 6 or a combination of the two can go 13 and 16 out in the backfield. A combination of those can go. And then it's really just kind of linking all the holes together so there's some, you know, sort of some form and some flow that will not be strange. Trying to, one of our other hurdles is we have a road that bisects our course almost down the middle. So we don't want the pros having to cross the street every, you know, every few holes because that's terrible for the flow. It's also dangerous, especially if there's a crowd following behind, then it just puts more people at risk. And we don't want to do that. We want to make sure that everything works cohesively.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense.
It does. And I'm still, there's two layouts. I have two layouts in my head and I could easily, you know, reproduce them. The problem is, it's just, I don't know which one's going to be in play yet. One of them includes crossing the road three times, which is kind of scary to think about because that road is narrow And I just don't want to piss off the neighbors that live behind us, because the neighbors do drive up and down the road all day long. They don't care if there's a tournament going on.
Yeah. They got to get home.
Yeah. They got to get home. They got to go to work. And then we also have our shuttle. And if we're going to have two shuttles this year, then it's just that much more traffic going up and down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them includes that, includes three crossings of the road. The other one, just the standard one crossing, just to get from 8A or 9-10 area over to 11 to play 11 through that side of the course.
So many little tidbits that you only know if you're at least semi-local to the course or local. Like, I think Corey was talking about something at Waco earlier, and it's like, I had no idea that's what was going on at that course, which all the locals know. They've been to that park many times. All the pros know. But from just a viewership standpoint, we have no idea what it takes to run De La.
I mean, when you're looking at talking about Waco or De La, you're looking through a lens that's this big.
Yep.
You don't get to see the whole production that's going on and everything that it takes. De La is a very unique disc golf course, and it takes a lot of, it takes a really, really strong staff and volunteer staff to organize a tournament at high caliber there.
And so you've been running it how long?
This will be my fourth year. I'm still kind of counting 2020's Masters Cup because I was...
You prepped for it?
Yeah, I was 80% of the way done with the tournament. The last 20% would have been finalizing the actual tournament taking place during the weekends.
Yeah.
So all the planning, sponsorship, it was all done.
How much have you seen it change throughout your tenure?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. I was actually reflecting on that on my drive up here. Through my first year being the tournament director, we didn't have really any changes to the course from how it was for a number of years, aside from Top of the World being changed. And then we switched it to starting the tournament on hole 25, having Top of the World be the fourth hole in the round, which was, everyone understood, but they weren't thrilled about it.
Yeah.
And then last year we had three par fours that we threw into the mix.
Yeah.
And those were shocking to see the overall scoring on those holes. There was 1-2 on hole 13, so I-5, the Windjammers hole.
Yeah.
And that was from Jay Ray from Dynamic Discs. He threw a sidearm about 180 feet down the tunnel.
Yeah.
He landed by our short pin, which is about 405 feet. And he threw one in 200 feet down a tunnel, straight into the basket. So he's the only two that I know of that on that position.
That's awesome.
Either in tournament play or without.
Yeah.
But this year we're only going to have one par four in play, and it's only going to be for the ladies divisions because we have changed the way that hole 15 is being played. So 15 is the kind of slight Anheuser turnover or forehand shot that plays up over a bunch of trees. And we usually play it in what we call the medium position. And in the Worlds back in 2011, we had a position that was long left up against the tree line. But with some of the changes that are coming around and some of the discussions we've had, it was the most notable thing to remove from the course was hole 12. So removing the kitchen from play.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. A lot of that has to do with the backup factor that individual hole creates. It's also, in my opinion, it's probably one of the most unfair holes on the course because you're throwing in a wall of trees. You're expecting your disc to make it through a small gap to land on the green. Bad shots get punished. And good shots get punished, and there's really no rhyme or reason for it. So that was a hole that we essentially came. It was a consensus that we should all remove it. So with 15, we're actually going to be playing to that target location from hole 15.
Okay,
so it's going to be like a 417 or 420 foot hole, maybe a little bit longer. I have to recalculate all the distance.
That'll be tough to access.
Yeah. It's basically just pinching down that fairway, and it helps us mitigate having another crossing fairway hole between 13 and 16. So 16 will go away.
How does the flow work after 11? You're still playing down the corridor 11?
Still play down the corridor on 11, and that's where we're struggling to find the right flow.
Yeah.
One of the ideas that came from the PDGA was play 1 through 8A. Nothing changes there aside from maybe 5 and 6, the combination of the two removed or one removed. You get to 8A and then you cross over.
Yep.
You play 11. Hole 11's basket is perpendicular to hole 10's tee pad. Cross back over the street. play hole 10,
interesting,
cross back over the street again, and you play 13.
Yeah.
So
then we don't have a hole.
No, 13 would still be there.
Oh, 9 though.
9 would be gone. Yeah,
9's out.
Yep. And that's where you guys are.
That's where we are as of now.
Yep.
Okay.
But there are also ways to change that around.
Yeah, no, I'm just.
Yeah.
But that's one idea that's floating around. The other idea is to play 1 through 4. Go from 4, you hike up the hill and you play 6. So 6 is still there. We would move 6 back to the long instead of in front of the water retention pit. And OB is right there, right behind the mm-hmm. basket. Mm-hmm. And then once you play 6, you go 7, 8, 8A. Then you hop over and you just, then 9 and 10 are completely out altogether as that little corridor, because you play 8A. So that's essentially, by cutting out 10, you gain 6. And then you can play over to 11. And then from there, you walk up and down that staircase.
After the par 4 15, what's the plan? Because you can't do 16. It's crossing with 13.
Right. So if you play to the chimes position, you're only about 120 feet away from 13's tee pad. So you would just keep walking past and go over to 17.
Mm-hmm.
And then 17, 18, 19, and then you play the hill to finish.
These are all the things that go into having to run an event of this caliber. And it's even tougher to make those decisions on such an iconic course.
Well, yeah, because I know I'm going to be judged as a tournament director, and as a staff in a tournament, we're going to be judged based on how the course plays and how the course flows and how it's all perceived by everyone, not just the spectators and the players at the time, but all the people that are going to watch it on post-produced coverage.
The entire fucking world, man.
The whole disc golf world.
Have you ever played hole 8 to hole 8A?
Yes.
Because that seems like such a fun shot.
That's possibly a gnarly par 4.
Possibly. I'm not sure if it is or not. In my mind, it seems amazing.
It is really cool. The only thing that makes it a really, really tough hole for any class of player is the fact that there are 3 really large oaks that kind of use as a barrier to protect the discs from going onto 8A's tee pad.
I was thinking about that.
So if you have a great drive and you park the basket, you might have a look. But if you don't get all the way down the gap,
just cut one of them trees down.
I think it would be terrible flow.
Yeah, it probably would be.
Everybody would wait on that pad for quite a while.
Well, especially if upshots were going poorly and they went down into the canyon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the past couple of years, we've had a couple of really wonderful spotters on that hole, and they are just Hawkeyes, and they see the disc, they track it, and they tell exactly where it landed. So there isn't a backup on that hole, which is something we're not used to, because we used to have backups on that hole
all the time. Yeah. That green's gnarly.
Yeah.
I like it though.
Oh yeah. It's probably one of the most iconic greens holes on our course. Everyone argues the top of the world is the most iconic hole, and I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
the most iconic tee shot.
Oh yeah. Yeah, guaranteed.
But not the most iconic green.
No. I think it's a combination between hole 8A and 17. Or actually not 17, hole 18.
Yeah, 18 with the drop off.
The drop off, the Anaconda route. Like if you have a great drive, you can get screwed by that Anaconda route and roll all the way down into the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Or just that uphill climb of 26.
Yep. Or the really, really stupid hyzer that you have to throw on 25 in the long left.
Yeah. All the way up the hill.
On a 50-degree face, which...
Mm-hmm. Is it going
to
be there?
I'm happy to announce that it's going to be back this
year. Yeah.
That's a great one.
All the FPO players will play the position that we have down where it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
So down where the retaining walls are. All the MPO players are going to play up to the hill. And I haven't decided if the Pro-Am players are going to play that exact same pin as well. Kind of just depends on whether or not I want to have a backup at the end. And that's the hole that always creates the backup for the end of the tournament.
Yeah, makes sense.
Bar none.
That and then walking up that hill. The next
Codename Fuck You Hill. I mean, that's...
I don't think I've heard that.
I haven't heard that either.
Yeah, 26 at the end of your tournament when you've already had all of your adrenaline running through you. You have a 10-minute wait on 25.
Been beat up the whole round
because
it's de la.
Then you get to that hill and you're just looking up. You're like, oh, God,
fuck
help me.
You.
That drive to me is so odd because it's so steep.
26,
Yeah. It's one of those drives where I'm like, that and like 2.
I've tried a few approaches there. I don't know what I love. It's been a while since I've played it, sadly.
Well, you're a busy guy up here in Stockton. I can understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of time consumed. a lot of different things consumed. One of them's time. A lot of things.
Oh, man.
So it's Silver Series and it's 18 holes. What else is changing?
Our title sponsor is not changing. We are still very much happy to be with Innova, having representing Innova Champion Discs this year. We're really happy for their support this year. But not really a whole lot else is changing. We're going back to a lot of the old ways of the Masters Cup with a lot of things. Trying to, you know, make some things more turnkey. So it's just something easier for us. Where one thing that we are removing is the shortened tournament layout for the final day for the pro-ams. And we used to do that for the national tour players as well, but we stopped doing that last year for them, and we're not going to move the tournament or some of the holes shorter for the pro-am for the Sunday round. We used to do that in the sake of time, but being in late April, early May, we can still be in plenty of daylight for an award ceremony, even at 6:30 or 7 o'clock. So
yeah,
it's really no concern. We used to also concern ourselves with, you know, people trying to travel back home that same night. But if they were waiting for the award ceremony anyways, they were all leaving at the same time.
Yeah.
So
people don't travel. I mean, they still do travel home, but like they all have everyone's on the same schedule basically on tour now.
Yeah.
On tour for sure.
Like, yeah.
Everybody's staying there Sunday night after for the Silver Series.
Well, and it makes it really easy for them too, because now they're only 2 hours away to get here, as opposed to, you know, I know some players are, because some people are going straight from DDO and they're going to the Challenge at Goat Hill because there's a 2 week break in between DDO and the Masters.
And some people they did last year, they skipped Goat Hill.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And they went straight to the Masters Cup and got an extra week of practice.
Yep.
And this year there's the same thing. The Challenge at Goat Hill is not a Silver Series event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just I think it's a B tier. I'm not 100% certain. But yeah, a lot of players are going there, and then they're going to go straight from there and drive up the coast and come play the Masters Cup and then drive further up and come here.
Yep.
So West Coast Swing is stacked for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. That it is.
And then after you guys, everyone goes up to Oregon for Beaver State, which is also a Silver Series tournament, which I did not see coming.
I did. Their infrastructure is very similar to yours.
Yeah.
They have bathrooms, but they're kind of dispersed across the park, but not great internet service. Two of the most
iconic courses, though, on the entire tour. And it'd be nice to figure out some way to beef the infrastructure up and have them still be very much included on the top level.
It'd be hard at Beaver State because there's so many roads and it's a state park, I'm pretty sure. So there's like so many roads in between. Like it's not the same where there's like people houses, but you'd have to block off some sections. I'm sure it might only be one road, even just like one part of the park. But
yeah, I've never played Milo MacIver. So
I mean, you play around a parking lot. You cross, I don't know, three different roads maybe to get there. Or not to get there, but
yeah,
to
the road the is kind of heavily involved just from like a spectator view. I can think of, you know, at least three or four holes, including hole one.
I'm imagining you can shut it down though. Like,
yeah,
some state portion park. Of it. And it's a really large park, and this is just one little section of it. So,
right.
Apparently, it used to be a ball golf course.
I've heard that. And you can actually kind of tell when you're looking at some of the holes because of how open some of the fairways are.
They're wide open, very, very wide.
Yeah.
Right on the river. I never knew it was on a river until I went there.
Oh. Yeah. No, you can't tell from coverage at all.
I've seen people throw it in the river. That's how close it is, including Jeremy.
Yeah. Well, if anybody can, Jared can.
Yep. Yeah. Interesting. Fun swing on the West Coast. A lot of different types of golf.
Very, very different types of golf. Yeah. I mean, especially just the very different types of golf that all the players are going to play between three different tournaments, too.
Mm-hmm. Is Portland Open still? Is it at Blue Lake this year?
I don't think the Portland Open is happening. I could be wrong. I could
the case.
I could be wrong. I apologize. I don't really pay attention to other tournaments other than the tournaments that happen directly around the Masters Cup.
I don't as much as I should. I think once the season starts, I'm a little bit more locked in. But I sort of just assume it's status quo until we hear otherwise.
Right.
Yeah, Portland opened June 2nd to June 5th.
Yeah, and okay. I would assume same venue.
Well, last year it was at, it got moved from Blue Lake.
That's right, to Keegan.
Yeah.
DK's course.
Glendovier. They don't have any information on it. Hmm. At least on the Pro Tour website.
Well, you know, unfortunately, COVID still threw its wrench in the mix quite a bit last year.
Yeah.
I mean, what I would say everyone doesn't know about the Masters Cup last year is the trigger was, or the cord was being an inch away from being pulled on the entire tournament.
Yeah.
And this was in late March, early April.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're giving me less than a month's notice to deal with this. But thankfully, Michael Downs from the PDGA is a rock star and went to bat for me in the Masters Cup and made it happen.
Downs is great.
I love that guy. I wish that he and his wonderful family lived out here close, you know, lived closer out here.
I assume he's East Coast.
I think he's in Georgia.
Okay.
Pretty sure. Because I believe he actually has, I mean, a lot of us are still working from home these days, but mm-hmm. I think that was the reason why he lived there is so he could work at IDGC.
Yep. Yeah, we worked with him at 2016 US Masters. And he was great. Him and I forget his partner that rolled along with him.
Was Marty Gregoire still rolling with him then?
Yep. Good duo right there.
Oh, yeah.
They handled quite a bit.
They killed it. They were awesome. I remember at the Masters Cup 1 year, we took a bunch of PDGA tape that they didn't use mm-hmm. in tournaments anymore. And we wrapped their rental car and then put Wolfcock, the T-Rex, on the roof. And it was awesome because they came back after being on the course for like 3 hours and their car was completely covered in orange and green PDGA tape.
Don't know what
happened.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we put Wolfcock on the car. We're like, dude, Wolfcock did it. That was the same year that Big Germ did the sky shot across the distance showcase mm-hmm. at USDGC holding Wolfcock.
Nice.
So he went to like every tour stop that year.
That's funny. That's great.
The little stories.
Yeah. I mean, the little story that goes along with Wolfcock that it belonged to, like, I think it was one of Marty's friends, like one of his friend's kids. It was his T-Rex dinosaur. And he was like, oh, I'm going to borrow this.
And it never got returned.
Well, I think it probably did get returned, but it's the most infamous T-Rex dinosaur in the entire world.
Yeah, after a full year on tour.
All the shenanigans it went through.
Yeah. So what's the day-to-day like for a TD of an event of this caliber at this juncture where we're 4 months out, roughly?
Right now, it's a lot of continued sponsorship conversations until we have collected all of the sponsorship money. And then after that, it kind of goes on, I wouldn't necessarily say pause, but basically what ramps up after that is our dedication and time and energy to the course, making it as prepared and as ready as it can be. We still, you know, obviously still sending emails back and forth. Setting up promotional posts on social media to thank our sponsors. But right now I'm still at the very, very tail end of all of my sponsorship conversations. Mm-hmm. So it's just starting to collect money from them and then get our t-shirt design done, get the caddy book artwork all finalized. Because the sooner all that's done, the sooner it's it's one less concern of ours to have to put up with as we draw nearer to the event.
Just a giant checklist and trying to mark things off.
Yeah. My spreadsheet has been nicknamed the Bible and it's 15 different tabs that all has relational data. And it's like, I put one and, you know, fill in one field and it copies over to like six other pages and it makes my life easy because it's all very, very organized, but I'm not smart enough to put it together. So I have to thank Braden Coolidge, my predecessor for handing it to me. But it's a lot of it's going to be workday focused coming up very soon.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be showing up to workdays. I'll probably be going out there on when we don't have workdays, just getting things addressed or taking certain notes to give to the staff and crew of what we call the chain gang on a punch list of things that I would like to see done. And a lot of it's really minor. And then the other stuff is just going out to the De La Ball Golf Course down the road and giving the maintenance crew a little bit of a punch list of stuff that we need to have handled because they don't necessarily like us going out there with some of our equipment and tools to sure. just for liability purposes, but yeah. They're super great people and they love it when our tournament comes to town, because their golf course gets exposed in a different light. You know, it's very, very welcoming that we have disc golf out there.
Yeah, that's good. That's huge.
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't happen without that partnership. Think of like the OTB Open with, you know, Glen Eagles, the place where they were.
Right.
And then just the way they get greeted, like today when we're out at Swenson all day and everybody's so stoked, you know, that we're there. It's it makes a giant difference when the property is 100% behind what you're doing.
Oh, totally. And I get emails from the property or from the maintenance guys all the time, and they'll be like, oh man, there was like a couple months ago, it was like right when we were getting all those major rainstorms in Santa Cruz. I guess there were some vagrants that drove their vehicles out on the golf course and they hooked up like some kind of tow strap to the baskets and ripped the baskets out of the ground.
Nice.
Like the whole irrigation box with all the cement and everything. And I got an email after the fact and they're like, hey, we just want to let you know this happened, but we already fixed it.
Nice.
They're already back in the ground.
Damn, nice. Vagrants. That's dope.
And I was just like, cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Like I didn't have to go out there and even lift a finger. This is great.
And so that layout will be essentially unchanged from last time the viewers have seen it?
By and large, there's only going to be, right now, there's only one change that's taking place, which is it's hole number 5. So it's after the second par 4. So the first hole 1 and hole 2 are par 3s. Hole 3 is a 700-foot par 4 with the basket in between a golf green and a sand trap. And then hole 4 is the basket placed on that knoll right where that kind of squiggly line-shaped sand trap is. Paul notably got the eagle on that hole. I think he was the first recorded eagle on that position a couple years ago.
He freaking would.
Yeah. And then hole 5 is the hole that is going to be changed. We have our municipal play on the right side of a cart path. But for the tournament, the basket is on the downslope of the fairway off the green, and it's not going to be there this year. We're going to move it and keep it in the municipal play position just because we feel like it's a better green for the play. It'll kind of entice all of the players to either get really creative with trying to play this really narrow gap off the tee on the right side, playing along a hedge, or playing a forehand shot that potentially has the ability to skip onto the green. And if you don't skip onto the green, the cart path plays like a river. So then you're going to have at best, the closest you can be is probably about 18 feet. And it's kind of on a downhill angle. And there's usually a wind or a breeze coming off that hill. Mm-hmm. So creates a little bit of difficulty there.
Yeah. There's never really a ton of wind at De La Proper, the proper disc golf course.
Sometimes there is.
I mean, it can happen. I know you've been there on a crazy,
the craziest windy day I've ever maybe played disc golf in was there. Like, it was scary around some of the greens. Like, trees were snagged. We heard 2 or 3 trees fall while we were out there.
Yep.
And I was like, whoa.
De La is a really old property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really old. And we've seen that course change year over year because of trees falling.
Yeah.
I mean, that dead tree, the iconic dead tree that was right in front of the short position on hole 5.
Yeah.
The uphill shot, that tree fell. So it's like, it's kind of a wide open hole now. I mean, the tree's still there. It hasn't been removed. I don't know if the club plans on removing it. Mm-hmm. If it were me, I would say, I mean, it still might come down to a decision that I make based on the Masters Cup. But if that hole isn't in play, then it's not really going to.
Yeah.
There's no reason to remove it just for that. But there's plenty of trees on the course that have changed. I mean, hole 6 does not look like it used to from back in the day.
Yeah.
It's dramatically different. It's no longer, like, there used to be some towering redwoods along that roadway.
I remember, hole 6 is
downhill.
The downhill hole.
Okay, gotcha.
Where the baskets typically.
Yeah.
Last year's finishing hole.
I was thinking of Barsby Roller Race hole for some reason.
Nah, two prior.
And I was there pretty short after that tree by the tee pad fell, and you couldn't really throw because the tree was like you had to throw from further back.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yep. Like this was the tree was like right on the front of the tee pad.
Yep.
Yeah, that was crazy.
The evolution of a course.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable.
Especially as one is as old as ours.
Yeah. When was that installed?
The course itself was originally installed in 1984.
Okay.
Pretty old.
Nearly 40-year-old course.
Yeah. When did Oak go in? I feel like it was 89 or something.
I think it was 89, yeah.
well, we're not even the oldest course in where I think we're the third or the fourth oldest course in the United States. Mm-hmm. Sedgley Woods beats
OG.
Us. OG down in Pasadena beats us. Mm-hmm. And I think there's only one other course that's older than ours.
That's wild.
So in terms of disc golf, we've been around for a long time, which is one of the reasons why we feel like we're, you know, why we get so many of the top pros.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's,
and it's unique golf.
Yeah.
Like whether there's a lot of flaws with it, you could say, but it's very unique.
Oh, absolutely.
Style and terrain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what other disc golf course on tour can you go play where the play is to land your shot 30 feet short and play the skip up to the pin?
The slide and the roots.
The slide. Yeah. And yeah.
Like you don't play hole 18 in the long right. You don't play that to park it. Mm-hmm. You do, you're going to more than likely go off the back edge and roll down mm-hmm. off that cliff. You
yeah.
play that hole to play up to that Anaconda route and you have a 28 foot putt to try and sink your two.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that hole is played.
It's a great two.
Oh yeah.
That's a crazy hole.
I think about the battle between Paul and Philo on that hole
mm-hmm.
years ago. It was like 2015 or something like that. Paul had ice in his veins from like 40 feet, just
yeah.
right yeah. in the heart.
There's been some great battles. That was the birth of Raptor Legs, I feel like.
It was.
The Masters Cup was the birth of the Raptor Legs the very first year we were out on the golf course.
Rick said it was, too, in an interview this year after he changed to DD.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, that was the birth of the Raptor Legs. It might have been the GK go throw with Luke.
Okay.
Where he said that.
Yeah. Yeah, and he dropped that right in front of Paul, big putted Paul.
Yep.
Paul still had like 60, roughly. Like yeah, it Rick, definitely wasn't a gimme, but
no, Rick had like a 90 footer
yep.
from level ground and
at
Paul
OB.
Was, yeah, at yeah. OB. I mean, both of them were putting at OB.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Rick converted and Paul, I think, hit the band.
Yeah.
That's he's lucky. Crazy. I mean, that was back when I think it was still such a close match between whoever was in third. If Paul bogeyed that hole, he would have taken third.
Okay. So not that that mattered
not
for
like
him.
A, yeah, but not, yeah. He, you know, he was playing to win. Care. But
and I mean that was before Rick's title. Was that early 2016?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was, I feel like, right after Paul had basically said in an interview, like, if it's close, I'm going to beat Rick. Like he's gonna crumble.
And
I feel like that whole off season, Rick's just gotta be fueled off that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was right after 2015 was Paul's Grand Slam year.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what the Grand Slam.
Yeah, 2014 was the big playoff year in Portland or
still,
in Oregon. Yeah.
Still probably one of the most incredible 27 holes of disc golf I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I remember watching that mm-hmm. on my phone in the parking lot at De La. I'm surprised they even had the cell coverage back then. But I remember watching it on my iPhone 4 at the bench in the parking lot, watching that entire playoff.
Like that was nuts.
It was 27 holes, and he said he birdied 26 holes in a row or something like stupid like that.
That's too easy of a course for Worlds if you can birdie 26 straight.
Well, that's a Blue Lake.
You just
they've definitely
you
changed it a lot.
Yeah. But still.
It's a lot of birdies in a row.
Yeah.
For any course.
Yeah. I'm not going to lose this type of streak.
Yeah. It's unreal.
And for anyone who somehow has not seen that, look up 2014 Worlds, the finish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Central Coast Disc Golf has the coverage.
Paul was way back.
Well, yeah, right? he was
spiked hair. Maybe
yeah, spiked hair.
Maybe had a diamond earring.
Did he have frosted tips then?
I don't think so.
I think that was the season afterwards. The next season,
you got to earn them tips. Well, and I like the like as they're getting spoken to by the TD or somebody, and it's they're going into the playoff, and it's Rick and Paul.
That was
and Rick's smiling. He's like, you know, let's go. And Paul's just like. Game
blank
face.
Yeah.
Like just absolutely determined. Yeah. And they battled. It's not like, oh, you know, Paul won instantly, but
I feel like Rick plays really well sometimes when he's loose.
Sure.
But I also love Rick. There's like when Rick's real loose, I love it. And then when Rick's like 49 feet in front of anyone else, walking to the next hole.
That's you know his I mean? Pace and that's Eagle's pace, I feel like.
Yeah,
but no like matter what, they're off.
They're off. That's me too a little
it's
bit.
It's like, when bro, you're closest to the basket. Like, like
I don't care.
Like, no,
I'm in front. I'm focused. I'm going to go putt right now.
Yep.
You know, but that's sometimes, that's the maybe one of the true hallmarks of a winner and of a champion.
Sure. I think you need to dig into whatever is your personality.
Yeah.
You know, it very well might be just kicking it with the group.
He's like, I'm parked, so I'm
I feel like Matty O just wants to chill back, cross his legs, put him up real quick, make a joke about Alabama football.
Yeah.
Roll motherfucking Tide.
Like, that seems like Paul's personalities. He's, like, in the round.
Mm-hmm.
He's loose. He's kicking it with the group. He's having a good time. Super easy to, like, you know, talk to. And Rick's the opposite.
Uh-huh.
And then they're off the course, and it seems like Rick is much more approachable. Like, Paul's super approachable, but, like, it seems that's the vibe I get from arm's length.
Yeah. Rick seems super loose off the course. Really goofy, chatty. Wants to just chat about silly stuff.
Yeah, and then on the course, total 180.
Yeah.
Yeah, as soon as Rick pulls, every time I see him when he pulls into the parking lot or gets off the shuttle for the parking lot to, you know, get ready or warmed up for the Masters Cup, he's just laser focused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything that's going to break his focus, it's going to be something bad. Otherwise, I mean, we all saw that how he played, you know, playing in his sister's honor at DDO this last year. I mean, as soon as that's a horrible thing to go through in life, and he battled through it, and, you know, kudos to him for, you know, taking it in stride, and everyone was being super supportive of him. That's one of the reasons why disc golf is so great.
Yeah, it's family.
Yeah, we're all just a gigantic frisbee throwing family.
Yeah, Rick's so likable.
Oh yeah. Both of them, dude. I've been such a big Paul and Rick fan for, you know, 10 plus years now. Well, an Eagle, like Eagle's very much like Rick in the sense of like going to be by himself while he's golfing, going to be walking in front of the whole group.
Yep.
Again, super approachable off.
Yeah.
You know, we had no relationship with him, and he was super easy to talk to the whole
time. Interesting to see him, because you see him and he kind of is not standoffish. That's not really correct. Like when he was in here, but like kind of quiet, reserved to himself. But then as soon as you approach him to like talk to him, like just opens up and becomes this pretty big personality, in all honesty. He's like, just wants to talk frisbees and wants to talk disc golf. And it's really interesting to
music.
See the contrast between on the course, off the course personalities, where Kev is just like, KJ is just KJ all the time. Like high energy, just happy, smiling, high energy all the time.
Yeah.
Both on and off the course. But then, like, Eagles, 180.
Yeah, Eagles not making the... He's not coming to the Masters Cup this year again.
No.
Saw his one of his posts on Facebook or social media or something. And, yeah, he posted that he wasn't going to be there.
Damn. So
I saw Bradley Williams is going to show up to the Masters Cup this year.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I want to see Dickerson's schedule if he makes it West Coast swing.
I don't think so.
Still no?
I don't think so, no.
Dang, man. I want to see him out here.
Love to see him out here.
Dickerson.
Calling him out. We'll
give you 14 stickers.
Yeah, from our mouth to your ears. Please come out.
Here. We want to see you on the West Coast.
Chucking buzzes and zones and drones. Man.
Is he getting the Z-line buzz? He's getting a signature buzz, not a Tour Series buzz.
Yeah, the one that they dropped was a new blend of ESP, or at least a new swirl pattern.
Which looked very cool.
Yeah, kind of like a little tri-fly. I feel like that might be like a Huck Lab thing, but
yeah,
a nice like three-spoked swirl to it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Pretty. There's rumor that that's going to be the 2022 like Tour Classic. Series, but then I've heard someone else say that it wasn't. So
ESP Lunas would be cool. A stock.
I have heard ESP Lunas were the Tour Series.
I would believe that. I think it's going to be some sort of like ESP blend. We'll see.
Nice.
We got a couple molds approved.
Speaking of Lunas, Matt gave me a present.
Oh yeah,
I did.
Nice blue Big Z Luna with a silver purple spotted blocks stamp.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
She'll fly. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the reason why I gave it to him. Like, it's not seeing any flight time being with me, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You better throw it.
Oh, it'll be thrown.
Yeah. Got to move that one up in the queue.
Yep. I got a queue of Lunas. Orange ones are at the bottom.
Yeah. Sorry, orange.
I like red and blue Lunas. I like white Lunas. I got a couple dyed ones.
Yeah.
That's like me and Casey Rocks. I've got a queue of Casey Rocks, and it just feels like I'll never get to them.
Because I'll
the
never get to some of them.
Just
which run?
It's the no time run.
Okay.
So
that was between 11 and 12?
Yep.
Yeah.
And from what I've read and been told, that was apparently the rum that was released weeks before Kenny had his 12-time Worlds performance. And that's the reason why, because I guess Inaba didn't know if he was going to win again. So they're like, let's stop stamping these 11 times and just make them Casey Rocks.
Yeah.
And then
that's interesting, this business.
I know, right?
I would just keep 11 times on there. Mm-hmm.
Well, then now every single Casey Rock you see just say 12 times. So it's, they're going to do it again and then hope he comes back and wins Worlds.
So can we speculate on what's on order forms and like what we see there? You know what I'm talking about, right?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Destroyers?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be Rick.
It's not going to be Rick.
After a certain time.
And
Vinny.
I don't think he's going to get it on the stock destroyer.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to see it, but I don't think that's how they operate. I think you need a world title.
It seems like they give them to world title holders.
Yeah.
And, like maybe they ask Greg.
Maybe, but
I think he's chilling with the Roadrunner.
So they were on the order form and they didn't say no one's name next to him.
Yeah. All three were available. We could still order Sakibot. We could still order Signature and a few less weights, I think. And then we could order one that didn't have any. And so we'll see those come in.
Yeah. And so to me, this is going to be the first non-signature flight numbered destroyer ever.
Yeah. Stock stamps.
If there's no signature.
Which or there maybe, won't be, I don't think, because the name would have been on the order form.
Yeah.
If I was Greg, if I was Barsby, I would say put my name on the destroyer.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's going to sell more than the Roadrunner. And the Roadrunner sells great.
But he does.
But it's not a destroyer.
He throws a Scorpius a lot, though.
He throws the Scorpius. And he throws the Boss.
A little bit.
A little bit, still.
But still, the Destroyer is so much better selling.
We haven't been able to order Barsby Scorpius in a minute, I'm pretty sure.
Start throwing Destroyers and stop throwing Scorpius. It's the same mold.
Yeah.
I mean, my Scorpiuses, though.
Yeah.
Or does Innova...
But the Arrow Markkanen Destroyer that I have in my bag is filthy.
Yeah.
Love that.
That's a Swirl Star?
Yeah, that's the one I showed him the box and we were speculating on what runs it was.
We tossed one of those in the mystery box recently, too.
So if you bought one of them,
you have a chance.
Hopefully you get that.
Yeah.
There's that and a Sexton.
Yep.
A signed Double G Emperor.
Ghost Stamp Cloudbreaker.
Yep. CD3.
Like a Passion, a Proto Passion.
Yeah,
a
Proto Passion with a Wonder Bread stamp.
Yeah, maybe something else.
Yeah, there was four or five, six maybe.
Out of like 70, it's almost like a 10% chance, somewhere in there, which we said we were going to toss them into very few, so I feel like 10% is actually decent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's good odds. Yeah. There's only 60 or 70, boxes.
Yeah, and they weren't like the collector's ones we did last time.
Mm-hmm.
These were just standard.
Just value.
Value. Value and variety mystery box, what we called it.
Yeah, five manufacturers minimum for 7 discs. Nice. Try to give people some stuff that I would almost guarantee that every box has something that that person's never bought before or really thought about. And hopefully it's a good pairing instead of like, oh, I still don't want this.
I feel like that's how all the Discmania fanboys felt after they got their mystery boxes from Christmas and the Eagle mystery box they recently released.
One almost every year and they're still good value.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and not knocking the value at all. The value's great.
The value's great. So anyone that like complains about it to me is just like asking for too much.
Right.
In a way, like they want a $140 disc in a $70 mystery box.
And sometimes you get it.
Yeah, sure. Sometimes you get it.
Yeah.
But like to just expect that is.
Right.
It's a little much to me.
That Discmania hype is off the charts, man.
I think it's crazy when they're like, oh, these are just, they're just trying to get rid of plastic.
It's like,
that's exactly what these are for.
Yeah.
Like I don't.
Don't act like you didn't know what you're signing up for. It is partially a stock dump.
Yeah, 100%. And anyone that says otherwise is lying.
Yeah, or expects otherwise is lying to themselves.
Yeah, 100%.
But there's still some fun stuff in there.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. And then sometimes I think the best thing about mystery boxes is you don't know what you're getting. There's this element of surprise.
Totally.
And sometimes you fall in love with something you never thought you would have fallen in love with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that's how I started a lot. I bought a lot of mystery boxes right away just to see. Like I'd buy a Discmania one. Like, oh, I don't like the MD. I don't like this disc. I think I had a V-Rock from Mystery Box, a Discmania Mystery Box.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't like this. But I found a PD, and I'm like, oh, this is pretty sick.
Right.
So.
That's how a good friend of mine was turned on to the C-Line P2. He got a triple stamp C-Line P2, and he was like, then the Sky God came out right after that, and he's like, oh, dude, all about the Sky God.
Yeah.
Yeah, then they changed the Sky God to that.
It's probably $100 disc.
Oh, that's the first one. Never mind.
No, that's the second run.
That is. That's the two.
I thought Sky God. I thought it said Sky God 2, Sky God 3.
It should.
It should say Sky God 2 on it.
Yeah. First one was C line. Second one was Swirly S. Yeah, yeah, and then Color Glow C.
This third. Oh, I guess the 2 is coming out of his head.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's below it.
That's a little weird looking.
Stamp design is such a hot topic. People weren't liking the Iron Samurai 3.
My personal take on it is there's too many of the same types of emblems in disc golf art.
You don't like there's, robot warriors?
There's too many robot warriors. There's too many skulls. Too many baskets.
Yeah, basket trees.
The basket trees. Yeah. Baskets with roots.
Yep.
Yep.
Like, there's too much of the same type. Like, a lot of these artists are great.
The Nate Perkins Night Strikes are dope.
They
are. That first Night Strike one that just had a desert scene in the scales, Manny Trujillo.
Mm-hmm.
That thing's
super
sick.
Rad. Yeah. I still think my favorite types of stamps are really simple one. Bar stamps, mini stamps, the KJ small stamp, like this.
Yeah, the Macbeth bar stamp behind you, the proto.
Yep. Yeah. I really think those are my favorite types of stamps.
I like that old end of a bar stamp. It's cool.
Yeah. Well, we kind of took a little bit of inspiration from that bar stamp with one of our bar stamps for the Masters Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So something similar to that.
Yeah.
I mean, that and what's on my back right now is it's our 35th anniversary logo from a logo that we had back in 1997.
Sick.
So just updated it a little bit and tweaked it.
Leonard does a good job of preserving those old stamps.
Yeah.
He stamps them on all minis and
he cares.
A new run here
it's
and
like
there.
It's like 92 NorCal series or something like that.
He's got a bunch of old NorCal series stamps on minis and stuff.
That one, nice. I don't think that's an old disc. I think that's a newer one with the retro stamp.
Oh, yeah. I actually kind of remember when he was selling those discs out of a recent order. Recent being like last year. Seems like everything's kind of just blending together these days.
Dude, my whole life blends together. I don't know what day or time.
Time is so weird.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially being in my perspective right now, time is like, it's finite.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the people that are in my club and community that know, but I'm moving after the Masters Cup.
Oh,
snap.
I don't think I knew that. Is that the big news to drop?
That was my big news that I was going to drop tonight.
Where are you headed?
We are heading about an hour southeast of the fort in Utah.
Okay.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
So what prompted that?
We have family and friends out there. We can afford to buy a house, which is what we did. We bought
Santa Cruz is not cheap.
No, we've been priced out of Santa Cruz. We've even been priced out of San Jose and Campbell where we are now.
What's like an average like 3-bedroom, 2,000 square foot house in Santa Cruz? Is it a million basically?
I would have to imagine so. Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, we can't afford to buy, like we looked all around the state. A lot of where we were looking was in proximity to where my wife's job is.
Mm-hmm.
So she hasn't there. Her company has an office in San Francisco, Redwood City, which is the office that she works out of. And they also have one down south in like Los Angeles area,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't want to move down there.
No,
and we didn't want to move really an hour further than an hour outside of the San Francisco office. So it kind of left us in a small little area.
Expensive area.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't want to move to the East Bay. So it made it really tough. And with my job at UC Santa Cruz, I'm still working fully remote. I go into the office on an as needed basis, but I'm still doing all remote work for the most part.
Yep.
So, it allows us to move and there's a really, really high likelihood that I'm going to retain either my current position or a new position at UC Santa Cruz within, my IT world. And I'll be able to make California wages working remotely 100% of the time in Utah.
That's huge.
That'll be nice.
So,
yeah, what's a house over there? Like the same
$4,000.
I was going to say, like probably $300.
Well, to put it into perspective, the house that we purchased was with a basement. You know, you have the ability to, if you finish the basement, then you have a fourth bedroom and a third bathroom. And houses like that go for on. $2,640 square feet, $500,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane. It's like, it's completely different.
It's like a $2 million house in Santa Cruz.
Oh yeah. Yeah. On just under four, it's just under 4/10 or
granted,
a little
you're
over 4/10.
Not near the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah. It's landlocked state, which is going to be strange.
Cold as hell there also.
Well, especially where we are in the high, essentially the high desert.
Oh yeah. That's Kansas there. That's like Kansas, flat. The plains and
yeah.
Yeah.
It's all flat. We have this beautiful mountain range that surrounds our
big old like wind.
360 degree views. But yeah,
oh, that's cool. The mountains at least blocked some of the wind.
Yeah.
That happens on the plains.
Did you research the golf?
Oh yeah. There? Oh yeah. I went out there for a visit in August and I played a little park style golf at this one course about 30 minutes away from where we're going to be. Cool little course. My biggest concern with that course is it had the worst signage. So I got there and I'm like, where the hell is hole one? And how
Oak
do I
even- Grove.
Yeah.
That's our course.
Not great signage.
Every time I go there, there's a new player being like, do you know where hole one's at? Like, which course? Yeah. Yeah, barely. I don't know where anything's at anymore.
Just a throwaway. Just going to birdie everything.
Yeah, just throw every hole and birdie them all.
Let's see the point.
You throw Luna's 400 feet, so yeah. You should be able to get around there, no problem.
I have. I don't know if I can anymore.
Just warm up to it.
I haven't played in a while. I haven't played since Team Invitational.
Yeah, that's November. What you were telling me. I was hoping you were going to get out and play since we last talked, but apparently not.
I don't feel quite comfortable throwing and not being hurt. That was my issue, is I would throw and then I would hurt so bad for a little while that I just didn't want to get back out there. And so I just stopped playing. And then about a month ago, I started working out pretty regularly, getting back in the swing of things a little bit. So
there you go.
Yeah, no, I want to throw. It's fun throwing, you know.
Yeah,
throwing things is fun.
Oh yeah,
throwing things is fun.
I mean, we saw Danny go live earlier today.
That was a good time.
I didn't see you throw, but
it was fun.
I saw you yell at the camera, and then they cut off too fast.
I did yell at the camera. He was right on my face. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna give him a show.
Yeah,
we're going WWE, and I'm gonna put on a show.
Yeah, it was funny because we were like, oh, Danny's not going to be here for a while. He's going live. And then I looked at my phone and you're like, yeah, I'm going to be a little late.
Yeah, it's like on hole eight at Swenson, going to be a little behind.
I just thought it was funny because I just remembered the text message conversation. I'm like, what time works for you and Danny? And Aaron's like Danny says 4:20. I'm like, okay.
I guess I didn't like process it all. I thought it was a weekday. And I'm like, okay, kind of after normal work hours, but right. Early enough that yeah. I'm still probably leaving, you know, at a normal hour. So
we saw a crash appearance today, though, at least.
So did I.
Yeah, he came in and he goes, we're like, oh, what's up? I gave him a big ass hug, walked out there. I'm like, yeah, I'm so happy you're here. He's like, I'm not podcasting.
No surprise there. I didn't even think about when I saw him at Swenson for, he was there and I'm like, oh, cool. Crash is going to come around with us. And then he was like, 30 minutes later, Sean comes back and his cart's empty.
Yeah.
All right, he's gone. Tim says that he's not allowed at business meetings now, too.
Apparently, he was like, you don't want me at business meetings. I make everyone... He was like, Tim and Courtney do such a good job, and then I show up and you think less of everyone.
Yeah, Tim takes over the business and he goes, you can't come to the business meetings. It's like, you're welcome around, like all of it, but...
Just don't come to the actual business
when meetings. We're trying to
probably
really
promises things he can't.
Yeah, maybe, or just, you know, doesn't take it seriously enough, which is a good quality to have in doses.
Increments, yeah. It was great though. He was like, I got to go work. Actually, he has Steph working.
Yeah.
He has, other Mark, his retired friend, Mark,
they're
working.
Short staffed for some of it.
12 people short.
Woo.
That's busy. Outrageous.
Yeah. I'm busy. I'm podcasting.
It's right now.
Yep.
No wonder he didn't drink
beer. It's a BYU women's
basketball game, right?
Basketball game, I'm pretty sure. UOP BYU women's basketball game.
Let's it's go. Being live broadcasted.
ESPN.
Big time.
Yeah, at the I don't think it's called the Spano Center anymore, but the gym at UOP, it's actually less than a mile. It's probably like a half a mile from here.
It is very close.
It's really close to how where UOP's at in relation to the shop.
So that's the second most important event going on right now to this one.
Yeah, this is for sure the most important.
Hey, you know, there's
millions of viewers will watch this.
Yeah.
Yep.
Big time. I actually freaked Sean Jack out with the the live that we did there.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, there's 48 people watching right now. He goes, really? Yeah. It's his 46th birthday. He had some great shots and some god awful shots.
Happy birthday, Sean Jack. I got to text him and say that. I haven't actually done it yet.
Oh, look at that. Actually, speaking of Sean Jack, I texted him this morning.
And he just texted you back?
Well, it was an hour ago, but.
Oh, you know. Yeah. Just text you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had just finished whipping that ass. We did doubles. Corey and I got partnered up. And it's like,
nice.
Game over.
I saw Neiman. Who? So I saw Master Neiman Cup out there.
It was Neiman and Andy.
Oh, nice! I miss both of them.
Yeah,
Jer.
Yep, Jer was out there for a minute, and then it was Mercy and Derlu and Sean Jack and Ben Fox.
Nice. That sounds like fun. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a lot of fun. The San Francisco Cats.
There's going to be some fun holes.
Shout out SFDGC also.
They kill it. I bought a tag today from them. $40. A little expensive.
That's all right. Steep, but they do all of their. Dude, they have some good shit going. Mercy and Company do their tag rounds on UDisc or all their rounds on UDisc.
Yeah.
And then they compile data and release all these crazy stats about the most consecutive birdies in the UDisc era and all this other crazy stuff. Like how many times people have been paired up, like the most common card. Like I saw the most common card. Like this card's happened 11 times. And I'm like, that's nice. A lot actually for how big that club is.
They kill it. Yeah. I bought a tag. They just had their tag round. I don't think it was that long ago. I bought mine and I got 427 tag.
So I got to buy a tag today and get 428 or nine.
Yeah.
All right. Let me message them.
Yeah.
I'll just text
Sean Mercy.
I'll text Mercy. Sean Mercy and just tell him to send, you know, send me tag number 666 when it comes in and I'll pay for it.
Yeah. There you go. So close to the 420 tag. And then we played singles or doubles, so I didn't even get to dump it on anybody. Like, I don't care what tag I get. I'm not going home with it, baby. Let's go. What's the best tag you got? Where's hole one? What's the course record? Proceeds to bogey 18 holes.
I've done that.
I don't think I have done that. And but. This is no disrespect, but I feel like that was something that Josh Anton would say.
I could see that. Who was it? Yeah. It was some old NorCal head. I feel like it was a Brad Armstrong who was just like, I heard him say that at one point. He's like, where's hole one? What's the course record? And he wasn't even talking about it. We were like mid round or something. But I was like, damn, I love that energy. Let's go.
Great.
I want to ask that at some point. Where's hole one? What's the course record? Let's do this.
Oh, that's great. I saw some basketball highlight. It was on Twitter's the greatest place on earth for little stupid tidbits.
Oh, yeah.
And it was this dude getting worked by some girl in the gym, basketball. And then he got his mom. He like called his mom up. And she comes and starts talking hella shit to this girl. And the girl just keeps balling this dude up. And then like keeps, and like talking shit to the mom. Like she would cross him up and hit it in her face and talk shit to the mom.
That's how you raised him?
And then like the tag was like, that guy went home with two moms. I don't know why that made me think of that, though.
Dude, that's the same kind of stupid humor that you would love in Ted Lasso. Have you seen
Ted Lasso? Yeah, he told me to watch Ted Lasso.
No, I would like to.
Oh, my God. I just got finished watching it. It is so fucking funny.
What's it on?
It's an Apple TV or Apple Plus original.
Okay. I don't have any Apple stuff.
I got Apple stuff. I don't have Apple Plus, though. Do I need Apple Plus?
I only have it because I recently bought a new iPad. So it came with like a year free.
I'll just bootleg this shit. Apple didn't
hear
that.
I've heard Ted Lasso's good.
It's hysterical.
And I like the dude. I forget his name, but.
Yeah, Kevin Sudeikis.
Yeah.
And you would like him too a lot because he is a huge sneakerhead.
Oh,
and
nice.
You are.
I like sneakers. I just can't afford any ones I want.
Right. Man. But I mean, same here. But yeah. He wears a bunch of like really rare Nikes.
That's sick.
Throughout the entire show.
That's dope.
So like there's one of them. I think it's the last episode. He's wearing like some like Tiffany blue Jordan ones.
That sounds dope.
And I was like, those are probably like $10,000 shoes.
Yeah.
And he's easily. Just rocking them on a street corner, supposedly in London.
Dude. Yeah. So the new Greg actually told me this, the new TNT, they have the Tuesday night show for the basketball. Like Thursday's Chuck and Shaq and Kenny and Ernie. Tuesday is like Adam Lefkoe and Candace Parker. I don't remember. Maybe Dwayne Wade might be the other one. And they have the bottom of the table cut out so you can see all the shoes they're wearing.
That's
pretty sick.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Chuck and Shaq don't wear no, I mean, I'm sure they have dope shoes, but they don't wear any dope shoes.
Yeah.
Ernie wears the cool shoes out of that one, that group.
Well, I mean, it's definitely basketball culture.
Oh, 100%. One of my favorite things is Bleacher Report. What's their, they have like a shoe part. I think it might be called Soles or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they just tweet about what all the players are wearing and all the PE, the player exclusive edition shoes. And they're just so cool. Like so many colors and like such cool design concepts and different materials they're using. Like that just sounds like so much fun to design a shoe.
Yeah. Talk to Idio.
Oh, I'm down. He's great.
Yeah.
Craig Kitchens.
I ordered a few pairs of those shoes.
I got two pairs coming.
Two pairs, yeah.
Yeah. I have the black pair. I'm pretty sure it's the black pair and the Sexton pair mm-hmm. coming.
Okay. I can't remember what colorway I ordered.
Yeah, I ordered the Sextons, and then he was like, I'm going to give you a credit because you want to keep those. They might be worth money. And I'm like, I might wear them anyways.
Yeah.
Things are meant to, I think things are meant to be worn. Things are meant to be thrown.
Totally.
I like collectors. I don't have no problem with them. But me personally, I'm going to buy a real expensive Luna, and I'm going to throw that thing.
Yeah, I was always a swirly destroyer collector, and I just didn't like Star for throwing.
Yeah.
So it never really crossed there, but otherwise all Firebirds are open season. I'm throwing them some bitches.
Yeah.
We had some nice Firebirds last year at the Masters Cup.
As long as they're flat.
Yeah. Yeah. Some really sick transitional Star, like super swirly ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Chris Shotwell was transitioning to his new role at Innova and he packed our order. So
sick.
He was like, oh yeah, I hooked you guys up with the best.
Shotty's the man.
I didn't, let's go. He was checking out the Pilots earlier and how pretty those are.
Those are nice.
I left two.
Yeah.
In the rack.
I told you I was going to show you. I said those are like my third-ish favorite swirls ever. My favorite ones are those Prodigy.
Yeah,
the D2 Spectrum. Pro.
Some of those are nasty.
It's the D2 Pro run that we got that have the mini Prodigy stamps on them were like insane. Some of the colors on them were just both the types of swirls and the contrasts were wild.
Yeah. And then that Kong run.
Early Kong Zeus run was, I think that's my first like, not introduction to the crazy swirls, but like the first time I saw like large amounts of crazy swirls in person, and like we were pulling through those boxes and like, whoa.
Unboxing, like we probably ran through like at least 2,000 of them. Yeah. So if there's 100 discs roughly in those big boxes, like we're opening 20 of those bad boys.
And just
like, wow.
Wow.
Every single time you're just thumbing through 100 of them.
Yeah, it's like, this is crazy. Like Melted Crayons. Eagle said that. Yeah. That just looks like Melted Crayons.
I remember when your site crashed. When you guys like announced, it was like one of the rare times you guys were announcing like, oh yeah, we're going to have all these discs on our site at 8:00.
Yeah. We used to do that.
Yeah.
Then our site started crashing and we stopped doing that.
Right.
Yeah. Throw a lot of money at it. Still crashes.
Yep.
That might actually change soon. We're going to have two IT guys doing decent hours of work.
Yeah. Working together too. Shout out Paul Blair and Phil Duclo.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah. Paul Blair is big on the Discraft page, like Discraft collectors page.
Yep, throws a lot of MVP too.
Yeah, he does. So
he'll be excited about the OTB MVP news.
So this has to come out after episode 91 now.
Yeah, we knew that. We knew that.
I know. Yesterday on the episode, I said that it might come out before or after.
We discussed some different timelines for this simulation.
Yeah. Yeah. Time's irrelevant anyways.
Well, I think it's cool that OTB and... Or the OTB Open now is sponsored by MVP.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they stepped up is basically what it was. Like, we were super happy working with Innova and, you know, would be very happy to continue that relationship at some point, but very happy to be working with MVP. And there's plans in place to step it up in 2023 and beyond, you know, assuming the guys can come to an agreement, because it's really not something that we have.
Yeah.
Much control over, you know,
we can influence it a little bit.
Yeah. Sean and Sean basically reach out to us and they're like, you know, would it work with MVP? And it's like, yeah, absolutely. You know, and then it's like brand X and brand Z. It's like, would it work with these guys? And like, yeah, we can definitely make it work. You know, would it work with Innova? It's like, absolutely. You know, we could kill it with any of them, but very, very happy that it's with MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. I don't think his MVP ever sponsored a tournament.
MVP, well,
I
mean, Open. MVP Open, yeah.
Well, I was more or less leading towards, like, is there a huge or a large caliber tournament that they sponsor on the West Coast?
No, nothing West Coast.
Nothing West Coast at all.
It's kind of like with Discraft. Like, Discraft doesn't really fall past, I don't even think they do anything really past Texas.
They did, didn't, wasn't Discraft?
Resistance, probably.
Yeah, Resistance.
Oh, yeah, the Resistance Disc.
I feel like they were maybe a Memorial, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Discraft was the 100%. Memorial.
Yeah.
Yep.
We'll be right back.
100%. No, it is interesting how those boundaries can sometimes be there.
Yeah.
And I know it was a big part of why MVP was so, like, bullish on trying to get in and be the sponsor for OTB Open, is they really wanted a West Coast presence. You know, I don't think it's something that we necessarily think about, that it's like, oh, MVP, you know, doesn't have a great presence out here. Certainly not something that we see really in our sales, because it's so national.
Right.
But I can picture it from their standpoint as just branding of, like, let's get, you know, a huge foothold out here. And certainly there's going to be a ton of, you know, gyro discs distributed through this event.
Totally. I mean, there's a bunch of people that I see, you know, we have a local club member that does all of our Lost and Found, and there's been an uptick over the past. It's kind of coincides with James winning Worlds.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people starting to try and throw MVP and their whole, you know, family of discs between MVP, Axiom.
Streamline.
And Streamline, yeah. Streamline's the one I always forget.
Yeah, but, dude, those molds are great too.
I saw somebody throwing a pilot on a video. God, what, I can't even remember what video it was, but it just came out of his hand so clean and just went dead straight. And I'm like, huh, that'd be a good putter for De La.
Yeah, no, they make great plastic. It's, again, we've talked about it on here before, but they were plastic people that got into disc golf.
Yeah, that's what Aaron mentioned. I think, can't remember when, or I know I heard it through this podcast. I just don't remember if it was me being a part of the podcast or not.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's an interesting introduction, that because every single other company I picture is disc golf, and then they have to figure out plastic.
Right.
They're the other way around.
Which kind of gives them a stronger foothold in the market, because they know what to do from the start, as opposed to trying a bunch of different plastic blends to see what's going to work.
True. Probably a little less R&D. They're so, like, particular with how they do it too. And they seem to be one of the most consistent companies. That being said, I don't know that we've really seen it, like a Photon, for example, produced over like a 7, 8, 10, 12 year period. Mm-hmm. But man, they absolutely know what they're doing, and they make some pretty plastic. Their glow is insane.
That's what Aaron was telling me. He said that I asked him, I was like, even better than the Castoplast? And he's like, doesn't even hold a candle to it. And I'm like,
I don't know. It's
Casta is really, really good.
It's really good. I think the MVP just glows longer.
Okay. Sure.
And it's like the MVP just glows in the day so good.
Casta, they're so close.
It's close to me. They're the best two easily.
Yeah.
Like, nothing else holds a candle to those two. Mm-hmm. I still think MVP might be a little better.
I think it might be too.
It took me longer. At first, I was like, nah, there's no way it's better than Casta.
Yeah, because Casta Blast was far and away the best on the market until that Eclipse 2.0.
Yeah. And then, like, I think Tessa, we've used both Casta and MVP at Boomfling. Mm-hmm. That's, like, the only place we ever play glow rounds, really.
Yeah.
And we all played with glow reactors.
Yep.
And it was, like, perfect. Like, no issue at all.
They glow so well.
You shine it one hole, you use it for three holes.
Dang. Yeah.
Like,
it's so good.
Really, really good glow.
I love glow plastic.
I love that glow too. It feels really good. It's not too slick, not too grippy.
Well, it's still all gyro, I think, that we've thrown. I don't know that they've made an Eclipse 2.0. I think they maybe did a run of pilots and traces early in, like, a prototype amount maybe of run. But as far as, like, mass production, they've only made the Insanity, the reactor. And now the, like, the Envy and the Proxy, but like, as far as what's actually been delivered.
I think
delivered,
that might be it. I feel like there was something first.
I think it was, they've done, I feel like the Inertia.
Was it the reactor first? Is that the first thing we got that was glow?
It's the first thing we got in mass.
Large quantities.
Yeah, and then the Insanity with the Halloween one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited for the Envy and the Proxy.
Yeah, those should be here sort of soon.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's next in line, or is the Orbital? The Orbital's after.
So many pre-orders. I don't remember anymore.
Yeah. A lot of pre-orders. There's just so many discs that are coming out these days. It's hard to keep up.
Dude, yep. I think it was a joke, but I heard that Nico was signing with Clash Discs. And then I looked up Clash Discs, and or someone looked them up and like screenshot, and there's like an actual thing. I've never even heard of them.
No, I'm not aware of Clash Discs.
We'll look them up right now. They said the website was the English.
Oh, I think we're losing to Power Grip too. I looked this morning.
Oh, it already started?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, the Clash Discs.
The retailer bracket.
Robbie C. Disc Golf.
Yeah.
The other Robbie C. Disc Golf.
We're in the finals.
All right, I'll share that right now. I didn't know it started.
Yeah, it was this morning. It was super early, and it was like 67%. They were ahead
of us. Oh.
It's Power Grip. It's one European company, I think, was included in the whole bracket, and they're about to take this old bitch down.
Voting.
That's hard to believe because
voting ends in 30 minutes, and we're losing easily.
Yeah.
That's because I didn't share it because I didn't know.
Oh, Aaron.
They didn't tag us.
Oh, Robbie
said. Oh, yeah, they did.
They did. It was probably my bad. Because I looked in there, and so it didn't pop up as like an unread message.
Yeah, I go check the unread messages, and
I almost shared it, and I'm like, should I put some sort of like call to action? Like, nah.
That's part of the thing too. It's cool. Like, yeah. I'm super stoked that they include us in it.
Yep.
But I also like it doesn't really do a ton if we win it.
No.
Like, it's not that big, like that important.
Yeah, it's cool to have made the finals.
Great to make the finals. I'm stoked that he does that type of stuff, and I'll share it every time I see it.
I'm still just constantly impressed. I don't know if it's just humility that it's like, we're there. Like, that's cool. You know,
hella
like,
cool.
We're
yeah.
included
yeah.
in all this. I don't know. I still don't necessarily, I guess, like have to picture it as a foregone conclusion that we're like up at the top of, you know, these amazing retailers.
I just keep thinking some people are going to start sneaking by us.
It's
kind of like one of those things. Like every time I see a Flight Factory or a,
yep.
What's the other one? Skybreed that just like keeps pumping stuff out.
Yeah, disc golf and shopping kills it.
Disc golf shopping. It's crazy to me, like the different avenues people take to get big. Like,
yeah, or look at, you know, Foundation, who's all content driven,
mm-hmm.
and then certainly Brody and Paul driven.
Yeah.
And not that's like anymore with Paul.
Yeah, no, Paul stepped away, but it's still, they wouldn't be where they're at without Paul.
Giant True. Names.
Yeah.
And then very, again, like very content driven.
Content driven, like. They all Silas, Hunter, and Trevor. I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure that they're always on every social media.
Yeah,
they do Twitch streams. They do Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, they have not a Slack channel, a
Discord, Discord podcast. Yep. Like,
yep. No, it's impressive. Like they've laid a blueprint for how it should be done on that side of business. 100%.
Yeah, it's all pretty cool. Like whether you like all of the content or not, like the quality for the most part is there.
Well, and that's the thing with content. It's art, you know? Not mm-hmm. everybody's going to like every part of it.
Right. 100%.
That's okay.
We did have someone, I showed her a picture of this yesterday. I don't know if I showed you it. Someone tagged Trevor in it and was like, you guys, you just stepped your podcast game up. This podcast room looks way better. And I was like, very different, but yeah. I do like our podcast room.
They kill it.
Their
numbers absolutely slaughter ours. You know,
yeah, like for as part of podcasts and YouTube goes.
Yep. They've been on YouTube for a long time. Mm-hmm. And again, like they've laid the blueprint for how to do.
They're really good at editing things over there. Like everything's really crisp looking. And
they've amassed a crew of people that have finite skill sets, and they use every single person on their staff to drive their product and their business.
We just have a bunch of jabronis here.
Yeah, and we just waste talent. The little talent that anybody has, fucking just, we're going to waste it.
Yeah, we're going to make you drink and smoke weed and things. Not make you. We're going to allow you to do those things and waste your own talent. So we don't actually waste it.
They waste their own talent?
Yeah,
we just enable
to do it.
A lot of ways to do it, you know?
But, you know, honestly, working here would be a really good opportunity for some folks because it kind of gives them, you know, it's like a little bit of a laid back lifestyle, mm-hmm. but there's also still like, there's a lot going on.
And we get shit done.
Yeah. You guys have to, there's a certain, you know, level of accountability that all of your employees have to make sure this you know, business thrives.
Absolutely. So absolutely. You definitely get held accountable by your peers here.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, I remember there's been a couple people in
throw a blowfly in the back of somebody's head.
Yeah.
I've been hit by blowflies in the back of the head.
No, for sure. I won't say who it is, but it's like, I think it was his first day here. And he's like, you know, everybody's kind of drinking. Everybody's like, you know, it's your first day. It's like, here, have another beer. And he's like, fuck, you know, all of a sudden he's in a spot. And he's like, it's not all party. And, you know, everybody, yeah, he's looking working. Around and everybody around is like kind of buzzing around him and, you know, having a few sips of beers and everything, but like getting orders packed and it's, you know, and it's proper. Mm-hmm. And we got to make sure everybody's getting the right stuff. You know, we have a pretty good success rate with, you know, with our orders going out. But yeah, he's like, man, this isn't all party for sure. Despite all the things heading into my system and being, you know, not necessarily peer pressured into, but like it's, you know, it's available to you.
Yeah. We're not
still got to get stuff done.
If someone wants to have a beer at lunch, we're not going to stop you.
No, have a beer.
We might encourage you actually.
That's fine. Yeah. There's constantly joints being smoked outside, inside, you know, it's get your stuff done.
Get everything done.
Well, for what it's worth, I've ordered probably 30 to 40 packages from you guys, and I've never had a mix-up with any of mine, so.
No.
It does happen, though. Like, it's inevitable.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
We've got a good process, though. There's checks and balances. There's, you know, three or four points along the process where mm-hmm. where it's like somebody's going to figure out if something has been messed up, and we're certainly not flawless, but there's plenty of points along the line where, oh, that's not what that should be.
Yeah, that's wrong. We mm-hmm. should fix that. Yeah, whether it's Greg yelling like, this isn't yellow green or something else happening, then
yeah,
that's always funny too. When I'm up there and Greg's stickering things like, Jer, this isn't pink.
He caught me on one the other day. It's like, it's rare. I'm surprised I don't fuck up more than I do because I should, but he caught me on one the other day. He's like, I got one extra disc. And I think it's probably just a quantity thing. It's a twin. There's a bunch of twins, but I think it's probably quantity 7 instead of quantity 6. I'm like, all right, cool. But there's been a few other times where I'm like, I'm pretty sure I didn't mess that up. 10 minutes later, they come back and like, no, it was fine.
Yeah, every now and then Greg will ask me a question. I'm like, I trust your judgment, but I think this might be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other day I think I just forgot to enter a Frisbee. And so like there's an extra Frisbee.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, just put it over here.
Yeah, we do most of our uploading in batches of like 50, essentially, is one of our plastic bins. They'll hold like 55 drivers or like 42 putters is basically the range. And, you know, every once in a while, one doesn't get hit.
Or one gets hit twice.
Or something like that. And so, yeah.
Every now and then, like, especially if things are too much of the same color or like they look really similar, like, you're kind of like, oh shit, where the fuck was I? And you can't go back and look at previous variations because it's like, oh, green, yellow, green, yellow, green, yellow, purple stamp, purple stamp, purple stamp, purple stamp. And you're like,
yeah, it won't show pictures on the back end unless you open it up. Picture drop down menu, you can collapse and expand. And the like default view is collapsed and it'll have like a text write up, but there won't be a visual.
Yeah.
So if you some boxes are pretty tough to correct your mistakes.
We've also learned a lot. I remember early on, I would just, for every box, I just upload that whole box of pictures on the website.
Yeah.
And then finding pictures was hella hard.
Yeah, it's best to upload it in batches. I do a third of a box.
I do it in batches of 8 because my default Internet Explorer page, the size of it.
Oh, you got to zoom out, bro.
I could, but if it's
zoom out, that's 12. I'm 12s up there.
See, if it's 8 for me, that doesn't really matter because it's, I'm gonna have to wait for these damn pictures to upload anyways. So
yeah,
it works. Ends up working.
Fun stuff of uploading things to the interwebs, the information superhighway, as I like to call it.
Yeah, the thing that Al Gore invented.
Al Gore, shout out you, bud.
Al Gore rhythm.
He's got the rhythm, 100%. So what else we got as far as Masters Cup? Anything else interesting that the folks at home should know?
I'm going to have a couple of really cool items in the players pack.
Mm-hmm.
That's more for the amateur players.
Masters Cup has always had great players packs.
Did the Rock X3 come out?
We were the first tournament to have the Rock X3. Mm-hmm. And we just sold the last of the Rock X3s from 2017 last year at the tournament. We went a little too
heavy.
Too heavy on that order because we got an initial order of 200 and we sold those in 3 days.
Yeah. Those turned around on the collector's market for a decent amount.
Yep.
In that time. I remember that.
Yep. Same. Mm-hmm. And we also were the first tournament to feature the Luster Champion AVR3.
Yeah. Yep. That's the one that Hoop little loves.
Puddle topped.
Yep.
If you have any of those, I bet you Hoop wants them.
I have two of them. I hit him up about them and he never got back to me.
Well,
I'll call that asshole.
I told him how much. $100 for the pair.
Yeah.
That's not that terrible.
No, and they're like some really nice ones that have some really cool like swirl in them for being a Luster Champ disc.
Yeah.
So they were in our Masters Cup vault forever and ever.
That guy can forehand an AVR3.
Yeah, it's a good flight.
Good feeling putter.
Mm-hmm. Flat top.
Very much so.
Yep.
Yeah, thinner mm-hmm. profile.
Yep. Fits good in the hand. But in terms of new stuff for the Masters Cup, I mean, I think the biggest thing is just that we're going back to 18 holes. We're going back to the golf course.
Yep.
So it's a little less play, but it allows us to have more players. So this year we're having 228 in the Pro-Am weekend, which is the largest we've ever been able to, you know, accomplish, mm-hmm. Given that we're losing 6 holes.
Yep.
And we have 172 open spots for the Silver Series weekend. Those were requirements from the Disc Golf Pro Tour.
Yeah.
You know, when people asked how come we removed the age protected pros from that weekend, it's, you know, mainly because of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, their requirement. They want 100 spots or a minimum of 104 or 112 spots for MPO and a minimum of 40 spots for FPO.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's dope.
We can't do a 144 person tournament and do, you know, 90 to 100 age, you know, age protecting.
No, you'd have to limit it to like 40.
Yeah.
And that's also a problem. Cool.
And that's not a problem, especially considering our tournament is called the Masters Cup. Our tournament started as a tournament for Masters age players. Mm-hmm. And through its evolution, it's involved the amateur players. And
I didn't know that.
That was the whole thing behind it was let's create a tournament specifically for the Masters age players. And that's when Masters was 35. And above.
Well, and still should be.
Yeah, let's go.
That's like 3 years away, baby. Let's go.
Is the fault line still a thing?
The fault line is hoping to return this year. The Enduro Bowl is returning this year.
Heck yeah.
It's been a couple of years since we've had the Enduro Bowl, but it's returning this year. And I believe the fault line is also going to try and come back this year.
Sweet.
Nice. I don't know who's going to be running it.
Keenan. Make Keenan do it.
Keenan would be a good fit. We have a guy in our club who's now our vice president, Ian's son. Mm-hmm. He is really dedicated to running tournaments. He's been hosting PDGA sanctioned leagues at our course for a while now, or at least the last like 6 to 8 months. They've all been, you know, huge success. A lot of people within our community that didn't have PDGA numbers now have one, so they can participate in that
sick
series. Yeah. And it's a cool way to get your rating. It's actually in my opinion, it's probably the best way to get started with a rating because it's probably going to be the most consistent rating you have.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's over a course of 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks.
It gets crazy though on singular events. It can be wild. When those 880 local players shred and shoot like a 1,020 rated round,
yeah, you're fucked.
It can really fuck up the rating system.
Yep.
And that's where, to me, the rating system is the worst, is in small fields, yep, local
exactly.
stuff.
Right.
Small pool.
And because, you know, that happens. Like when I was a much worse player, like learning the game, playing my home course, my scores would drastically change. Mm-hmm. Because I knew every line. It's just whether I could execute it or not. And I would have, you know, the 7 over and the 7 downs pretty right. pretty close together, so that could really screw some wrenches and some ratings.
Yeah, I think day law is just the all-encompassing equalizer, though.
That's true. Everyone shoots bad there. Except for Paul.
There's a lot of players that, you know, I mean, think of Dylan Evans, right?
Yes. Yeah.
9, I don't know what his rating is now. He hasn't played in a PDGA-sanctioned tournament.
He told me he was getting fat last time I talked to him. I said I was getting fat. He's like, yeah, me too.
Yeah, but Dylan is like 6'6".
He's got that monster forehand.
Yeah, it's disgusting is what it is.
Yeah, it's nasty.
I love that guy, though. He's so nice.
Oh, yeah. Dylan's glow firebird turnover on 13.
Mm-hmm.
He throws it, huge turnover, goes out over the trees, lands probably 80 feet away from the pin, and it's a 550 feet hole.
I saw and tried that route when I was a kid. It's like, yeah, you definitely don't have that, but like it is there.
Oh, yeah, he's
hit it. Just needed a fucking 6'6 long arm giant to show it.
Dylan was at one of my favorite rounds I've ever played. It was at Oak. I shot really well at a frying pan. It was windy as hell. We were playing purple. And like every hole, I just threw a forehand firebird shot, like one of those purple rounds. And I was always right in front of Dylan because I was playing really well and he was playing pretty well. And he'd be like, "What'd you throw there?" Firebird. Like, all right. He'd throw the same shot. Like the same thing would happen. And it was just one of those fun rounds where it was just like me, him, I think Cedar, Rob Ryan, and
the ultimate gamer.
Yeah, it was like one of the funniest and fun rounds I've ever played because Rob was, for whatever reason, was angry about the layout.
Of course he was.
And he was just like yelling about the layout while shredding. Like, I'm pretty sure I shot like 11 down, like 1,020 rated round, and Rob beat me by like 3 strokes. And I was just like just complaining the whole time. Yeah. Wanted to take his shirt off the whole round.
Show off his piercing.
Yeah, super interesting round though, but Dylan was just launching these forehands.
And he makes it look so easy too. That's the thing that pisses me off.
I could throw almost as far as Dylan on a lot of forehand lines, but I'm throwing as hard as I can, and it looks like I'm throwing as hard as I can. And Dylan's like...
It's a big lever.
Just a big old lever. And like, he played at Cabrillo College baseball the same time I played at Delta. And I'm pretty sure we played against each other. I can go look. It's really interesting. There's a bunch of pitchers that played, like whether it's Cabrillo, like Sparlin was a pitcher at Sac City. And we all played at the same time in the same league. And it's kind of, we're a bunch of disc golfers now. It's kind of insane. Like Northern California disc golf baseball community crossover. Cedar also.
Yes.
Cedar Morgan. Oh, we got Leonard Muse over there.
Yep. He's spying on us now. He's
spying on us. I saw him shopping.
Does that mean Sean Jack's going to just barge his way in here eventually?
Sean wasn't here.
I think they're headed home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leonard wanted to come shop probably.
Yeah, had some cast stuff for us too.
Ooh.
He orders thank the you, max, Leonard. And he knows we need more than the max.
Yeah.
And he doesn't quite need the max. So
we'll take any leftover casta.
Yep, 100%. Especially the gloves.
That shit sells out. Or it's black, or it's a Berg.
Yeah, Bergs.
Bergs sell.
Yep.
Instantly.
Funniest story I ever have about a Berg is just recently, you know, within the past 6 months, me and a bunch of guys from De La, we went and camped out at Browns and Bows.
Mm-hmm.
We played Charlotte's Web. And my buddy Mac is a lefty, you know, lefty player. And he threw a Berg on one of the holes at Charlotte's Web. It's like downhill, baskets framed up in between two trees, and hits it dead center. But it was like a 65 mile an hour just cruise missile. And it hit the basket. He turns around, throws his hands in the air. He's like, yeah, just screaming at the top of his lungs. He's so happy. All of us were dead silent. Because it spit straight back out because it's on those, you know, marksman baskets.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wondering why none of us are like high-fiving him or cheering along with him. And he turns around and he sees his disc is on the ground. Oh, funniest fucking moment. So funny. Just
great.
I'd never thrown that disc until that weekend. And it was like, it's just so straight. It has so much glide until it loses just an ounce of speed.
And it stops.
Just drops.
I think it'd be perfect for a course like that where like, the Berg's one of those discs where it's hard to throw it past most baskets, no matter how hard you're throwing. Like,
sure.
Like, you're going to underestimate how not glidey it is.
Right.
Because it just falls out of the sky at the end. It's just like, I'm done flying.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm going straight down now.
Earlier today, Neiman stuck a Berg inside, like, almost like a Zephyr type disc. And if you want no glide, that's the way to do it. Shove a Berg inside another
Neiman
disc.
Neiman switched to Bergs recently.
Yeah.
I keep seeing him post them. Neiman takes some great pictures.
Yeah. Actually, we've got some good pictures from earlier today on 5 OTB open layout where you're throwing into that other grove of trees.
Yep.
we're going to be approaching that, but from the opposite direction, kind of crossing Nines fairway.
Sick.
And going over probably like a 380 water carry, par four into that green, but there's a fallen tree. It was gorgeous. Like, got some nice pictures of that fallen tree. That's and dope. Then, so we ended up, I climbed on that tree. And then I think Leonard and the Shawns ended up climbing up there too. We got a nice picture.
Nice. Matt has some good moment. Pictures of me at Boomfling.
Yeah.
Real late that. One night.
After some shenanigans, huh?
Yeah, a lot of. I got back from the bar.
Handful of shenanigans.
A handful of shenanigans for sure. I'm standing in front of one of the beers. The deer bears. For those that don't know.
Yeah, it's a bear and a deer. It's a beer.
It's a beer at a brewery. Makes sense.
Yeah, really does.
Yeah, that was the night that what's-his-face was riding his bicycle around.
Sober Don.
Sober Don.
It's also one of Ron Hill's favorite tournaments.
Yes. It's one of anyone that's ever been there's favorite tournament, unless you are a man that cares about being razzed.
Yeah, and score.
And sanctity like, really of, caring. Like, disc golf. Because it's a shithole of a party.
Yeah, shit show.
Shit show, not shit hole.
Shit hole makes it sound really bad.
I mean, it can be. Shit
show sounds it's like only sort of bad.
Yeah. People sleep under RVs sometimes.
Yeah, on accident.
Or kind of on purpose.
Yeah, I think he was hiding.
Yeah, he said no one would find me here.
I found him. Found him, took it on the course and whipped that ass. It's the worst I've ever seen him play. Like, by far.
Sandbelly Sammy.
Yeah. Good times. Good times. Well, Matt, thank you.
Thank you for coming, dude.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Yeah, mine's empty, but, you know, cheers. To you guys. Appreciate you guys letting me come up. And
I'm going to come play whatever you call Masters Cup Utah in a few years. It might not happen right away, but it's going to happen, I'm sure. There's going to be a fun Matt Beatty tournament in Utah somewhere.
You know, for as many times as I've said it now that I'm not going to do anything disc golf tournament or club related, I know I'm going to get to a point where I'm just itching to get back into it.
Yeah, it'll be 5 years from now or something.
Yeah. You guys should do that a little. You know what? I got it.
I got you. Someone's going to peer pressure you into this.
Yep.
Maybe it'll be me. Maybe I'll just text you all the time. It
might just be us, yeah.
Like, hey, Matt, dude, we want to come to Utah and check your area of the woods out.
Well,
run a tournament. We'll sponsor it.
I'm only going to be like an hour away from the fort.
That place is cool.
So, and I'm looking forward to checking that out. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's like I start working with the Utah Open crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good crew.
Infinite Two's up there.
Yeah.
They're cool.
Yeah.
I have no idea where they are in relation to where I'm moving.
Are they in Ogden? Ogden is where...
They're in Logan, Utah.
Logan. Yeah, Ogden is where Utah Open is, right?
Yep.
Yeah. They're like 40 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was southeast, but I could be way off on that.
Interesting. I'll have to look it up.
Definitely a good crew over there.
Yeah. Yeah, Infinite.
I'm mostly known from what Danny says, but in the talking to him a little bit I've done, they seem great.
Yeah, I like them quite a bit.
I got some cool ideas,
I feel like I wish I didn't like them.
But I do. But I do.
Yeah.
So I'm stuck.
Good folks, yeah.
It's hard to dislike people in the same industry because you guys are all trying to do the same thing. You're just trying to grow the sport and make it better for everybody. But there's obviously
a lot of,
some
gamesmanship. There's a lot of industries, though, that everyone just hates each other.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe one day we'll be there. We can only hope.
We can only hope we hate everybody one day.
Yeah, one of these days. Just we're not there yet, and grow the sport, and maybe we'll get there. Right on.
All right.
Good
Thank
stuff.
You, Matt.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the Luna.
Absolutely.